Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor LaCain. The coming election is the most important in our lifetime. The current president, elected with the help of a hostile foreign power, is undermining the rule of law, attacking the press, and eroding our democracy. We must elect Democrats to Congress to put a check and balance on this authoritarian president. Possibly the most important issue that could help Democrats win this election is the outrageous Republican tax bill that gave a huge bonanza to the top 1%. Here to talk with us about that bill is our first guest today, Robert Kuttner, co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect magazine. Following him, we'll talk about the stunning election in Florida, where a candidate backed by Bernie Sanders came out of nowhere and won the Democratic nomination for governor. Our guest, Christine Hanna, is the founder of Indivisible in Tampa, which she has built 6,000-strong volunteers. And she'll help us understand how Mr. Gillum won the Democratic primary for governor and how that race can help guide other Democrats to victory. First up is Robert Kuttner, who co-founded the leading political journal, The American Prospect, in 1990 and continues today as co-editor. He is a leading voice for progressives nationally and a professor at Brandeis University. His latest book is Can Democracy Survive Global Capitalism? In addition to writing for The Prospect, he writes for The Huffington Post, The Boston Globe, and The New York Review of Books. We met years ago when we both lived in Boston. Robert Kuttner, welcome to All Together Now.
Eleanor, happy to be back with you.
Yes, wonderful. You decided to devote the entire recent issue of The American Prospect to the Republican tax bill. Can you explain to our listeners why you thought that tax bill was so important to warrant the full issue?
Well, first of all, it was one of the very few pieces of legislation that the Republicans actually managed to get through Congress, having tried and failed to repeal the Affordable Care Act and do a lot of other damage. And we thought that it was emblematic of both the corruption that the Republicans embody and the fact that they are shills for the top 1%. And everything you need to know about the Republican Party and what it really stands for is in that bill. Basically, virtually all of the tax breaks go to the top 1%, if not the top 1%, the top 10%. But even worse than that, Republicans who are supposed to be fiscally responsible have opened a deficit that's around $1.6 trillion, depending on how you count. And then they use the expanded deficit as the pretext for cutting programs like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and other programs that most working Americans value. So it really smokes out who they are. And I think they gambled on the premise that because a lot of tax policy is so complicated, so intricate, that most people would not take the trouble to understand it. So we felt it was really important, both for ordinary Americans and also as a kind of a campaign manual, to have between two covers everything you need to know about the Tax Act. And among other things, it gives tax relief to corporations that corporations then turn around and use for stock buybacks intended to pump up the value of the stock that enrich executives but do nothing for the real economy, and a lot of other detail that we think we explained really well. We had a combination of economists who are real tax experts but who know how to write for a lay public, and journalists and political activists and experts on tax reform. And we circulated many thousands of copies to campaigns, to advocacy groups. So if anybody wants to know all about the Tax Act, just go to prospect.org, and it's available with no paywall.
Right, fantastic. I love your issue. I think it's one of the best you've done, and the American Prospect is, I believe, the best political journal out there. So I encourage our listeners to go to prospect.org. Even as citizens, it's important to know what the Republicans have done here. And you just laid out the case very succinctly. Let's look at each of these a little bit more in depth for our listeners who may be hearing this for the first time. But you mentioned about the bill, the Republican tax bill, favoring corporations and the very rich. And I learned from your journal that 83% of every dollar in that tax bill is going to the top percent, mostly to the large corporations, but also to the very wealthy. Can you talk a little bit about how this tax bill favors the very rich?
Well, one of the things it does is it makes offshore tax evasion even easier. Trump talked very much about the importance of restoring American jobs, but this bill actually creates incentives to move jobs offshore. Corporations get bigger tax breaks to the extent that they move jobs overseas. While Trump was adding all these new complexities to help rich people to the tax code, he was cutting back the IRS's ability to do audits on rich people. And as I said, the flip side of this is that by increasing the deficit through all of these tax loopholes, you then create pressure that the Republicans claim is necessary to cut programs like Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security. The other really important thing to understand about the tax bill is they thought this bill, this act, was going to give them bragging rights to say, hey, we delivered a tax cut to Americans that would work well on the campaign trail. And what we demonstrated in this special issue of the Prospect is that that backfired, that Republican candidates, based on their polling, realized that this bill is not popular. And they pulled TV spots that they had made bragging about the Tax Act. The first time that happened was in the Pennsylvania special election that Connor Lamb narrowly won. And Lamb's opponent started running TV spots bragging about the tax cut and then stopped running those spots. So not only is this bad legislation that hurts working people and hurts the bottom 95%, but the bottom 90% realizes this. And so their calculation that this would be good politics has completely backfired.
Yeah, exactly right. And right off the bat, just from what voters know about the tax bill, they don't like it. And then polls are showing the more information voters have about this Republican tax bill, they like it even less. So, you know, it's really interesting because often taxes were generally seen as an issue favorable to Republicans. But this year, because of the big grab for the top 1% in this bill, we're actually talking about the Republican tax bill is one of the best ways for Democrats to win. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, if you look at the claims that Trump and the Republicans made, one was that it would increase worker pay. And so there were a handful of efforts between the Republicans and some big corporations where corporations gave one-time bonuses. But the vast majority of the tax breaks that corporations got went to the corporate bottom line and did not increase worker pay at all. Only 4% of workers as of mid-June had received any kind of raise or bonus that resulted from the Tax Act, totaling about $7 billion compared to $484 billion in stock buybacks since the tax plan passed. So 60 times more went to corporate bottom lines and to stock buybacks than went to workers. The administration also claimed that The cuts would keep jobs in America. As I mentioned, the Tax Act actually creates more incentives for offshoring. And one of the big Republican claims has been the need for tax simplification. Well, this this further complicates the tax code. And Trump claimed that this tax bill will cost me a fortune. Well, in fact, the opposite is true, because the so-called pass-through provision, which allows you, not by changing anything that you actually do as a business, but just by changing the way your accountant keeps your books, to cut your tax rates, and that's particularly beneficial to real estate people like Trump. So this benefits Trump directly, as well as hurting the Republicans politically.
Right, exactly. So the other thing about this bill is, we've already talked about how about 83% of the benefits go to the big corporations and the very wealthy, but the other part of it, it's so shady, because the corporate tax cuts are permanent, but the small crumbs that they're throwing to the working people are actually temporary cuts, and they're going to be rolled back. Isn't that right?
Well, except that Republicans are now talking about making the individual parts of the tax bill permanent. And let's be careful here, because most of the individual tax cuts are also tilted to rich individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So making the individual tax cuts permanent is not a remedy for everything that is wrong with the tax bill. I mean, I hope when the Democrats take back the government that they will just repeal this and use some of the money that is saved for things like a public infrastructure program and so forth. There are lots of little nasty things in it. For instance, the Republicans decided to punish states that have decent levels of public expenditure by removing the tax deductibility of state and local taxes. So if you're in a state like New York or California that has decent public services, a blue state so-called, you get a tax increase, even if you're moderate income, because you can no longer deduct a lot of your property taxes, your sales taxes. All state and local tax deductions are now capped at $10,000. It increases the marriage penalty for poor people. It whacks Puerto Rico by changing the tax status of corporate investment in Puerto Rico that 30 or 40 years ago was liberalized to create economic development on that island. And just after Trump has whacked Puerto Rico by denying hurricane relief, Trump is whacking Puerto Rico again by changing its tax status. So, you know, below the radar, below the big stuff, there's lots of just nasty little stuff. It denies the child tax credit to children of undocumented immigrants, and on and on and on. So the good news here is that in looking at the public opinion polling, turns out that there's a lot of support in the electorate for raising taxes on rich people. And that's not something that Democrats should be afraid of, so that when Democrats get back in, and they will get back in, doing real tax reform should be the absolute top priority.
Yeah, excellent. Well, that's very encouraging. You know, people are getting scared. The ones who are paying attention to it, looking right after this Republican tax bonanza for the rich passed in December, immediately the Republicans are going after big cuts in programs, as you mentioned, like Social Security and Medicare, and that this is part of a Republican strategy to give a pretext for why to cut programs they want to get rid of anyway.
That's right.
Now, you know, if people assume, I'm amazed when I talk to people, I go, oh, well, Social Security and Medicare, that's so popular, they couldn't possibly take away that. But the strategy seems to be to kind of slash and burn as much as they can do and kind of chip away at it until it's, you know, a shadow of its former self. People need to understand we actually can lose these programs, and not just Social Security and Medicare, but all the programs we care about, the Environmental Protection Agency, federal support for education. I mean, you name it, this kind of a tax bonanza is putting pressure to make cuts all across the federal budget. And I agree with you. The only remedy in this situation, we've got to elect Democrats and repeal this entire abomination of a bill.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the Democrats. One of the good things about this bill is that not a single Democrat voted for it. And the two Bush tax cuts in 2001, 2003, Bush was a little cleverer than Trump. Some of the tax relief, not much, but a little of it went to working people. And so about a third of the Democrats in both houses felt that this was something they had to vote for. It was going to pass anyway. They jumped on board so they could claim some of the credit. And the Reagan tax cuts were supported by some Democrats. In this case, Democrats have hung tough, and the Democratic caucus in the House and the Senate did not lose a single Democrat. So the lines are drawn here. In past fights over tax cutting, the partisan lines were blurred. So the Democrats, I think, are sticking together, and repeal of most of the provisions in this and a shift to taxing the rich should be at the top of their agenda.
Yeah, I agree totally. And I read your wonderful Prospect Journal on this tax bill cover to cover. And attended.
Oh, well, thank
you. Yeah, and I went to the great briefing you gave in Congress on
right.
on this very issue. I got so inspired by what you're doing here. I put together just a very brief, like a two-page summary of what every candidate needs to know about the tax bill and why it should be central in the campaign. And went out to Indiana and gave it to the campaign team for Senator Donnelly. I'm giving it to the like a briefing for the Bernie Sanders endorsed candidates, the Our Revolution candidates, making it available to them. So I just any avenue I have to get this message out, and I invite our listeners also to get informed about this Republican tax bill. You know, see what the major points are, why it's such a disaster on wheels. And, you know, talk about it and bring it to the attention of anyone you know running for office, because it's a great
right.
differentiator. You say, this is what the Republicans are. Like you said, this, you know, it exposes who they really are and
well,
exposes
that's
the Republican corruption.
That's why we did it. So
yeah.
thank you for affirming that that impulse on our part. You know, The other thing that this epitomizes is Republican hypocrisy. I mean, in April, the Republican House voted 233 to 184 to approve a constitutional amendment requiring the federal budget to be balanced. Now, this failed to get the necessary two-thirds, but, you know, on the one hand, these people are saying we need a constitutional amendment to balance the budget. In fact, the Tax Act unbalanced the budget and increased the national debt by close to $2 trillion. So you can't really have it both ways. Either you're going to cut the tax code to benefit the filthy rich, or you want a balanced budget. But you can't very well do both things. And again, Republicans are supposed to be big backers of states' rights, but in this tax bill, states' rights were repeatedly violated. So I think in a perverse kind of way, This bill is a blessing in disguise, because it helps expose what the Republicans are really for. And we had two pieces in this special issue with the Prospect by two of the best public opinion analysts, pollsters in the country, Guy Molyneux and Stan Greenberg. And both of their work, both Stan and Guy, had done extensive polling and focus groups, and demonstrated that once people are exposed to the arguments, they don't like this. So that's also good news.
Right. So that's why it's our job to get the word out as much as possible about what's
right.
really in this bill. And so people are informed, candidates are informed, and people can vote accordingly. I think anybody who reads it, I don't care even if you're a Trump supporter or a lifelong Republican, you look at that tax bill and you go, oh my God, this is just a travesty. It's just blowing a hole and exploding the deficit and just exacerbating our already extreme income inequality. It's going rapidly in the wrong direction. So thanks for drawing so much attention to it. Now, you mentioned about the Republicans voting on this balanced budget amendment. They want the constitutional amendment to balance the budget. And obviously that's very hypocritical, given that they're just blowing the deficit even higher. But I am concerned about this push by a certain segment of the right to have a constitutional convention. And we just had on this show recently the author of Democracy in Chains, Nancy MacLean, and
oh, yeah.
She was talking about this as part of the long game strategy of the right to quietly get support from the states for a state-initiated constitutional convention, and once it's convened, there's no rules on what they're going to do in there. And they'll say, well, it's about we want to balance the budget and get the agreement by the states to have the constitutional convention. But truly, once they convene, there's no rules, and they can basically rewrite the Constitution. How concerned are you about that?
Well, I'm concerned. I don't quite think it's going to happen. We're probably going to take back a bunch of legislatures in the November election, and some of the legislatures that have done this are likely to repeal it. So I think this is going to be a case of dodging a bullet. I don't want to be complacent. We really need to fight this. Nancy MacLean's right. It's a kind of a sleeper, but I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah, that would be good. Well, I think we definitely want to keep our eye on it. Apparently, we need about 34 states to approve this constitutional convention, and it's already been passed in 28, so they only need six more states to do it.
Yeah, but I would wager that some of the ones who've passed it are now going to rescind it, because I think some state legislatures are likely to flip.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So let's keep an eye on that, and our listeners too. And I hope to have Common Cause on here soon, which just did a great briefing on this whole issue about the danger of a potential constitutional convention and what it could mean and why we need to stop it. I want to talk now about your position on impeaching Trump. As so many people, progressives, Democrats generally don't want to talk about impeachment because they're afraid that discussing it will animate Republican voters in the November 6th election. You're in favor of impeaching. You're talking about it. Why do you think that's a good thing to be talking about now?
You know, as recently as Trump's comments excoriating Attorney General Sessions for allowing two criminal prosecutions against sitting Republican congressmen to proceed. You don't need Mueller's report to demonstrate that Trump is obstructing justice. It's all hidden in plain view.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes more and more flagrant in his effort to undermine the special counsel's investigation and his firing of Comey. You already have enough stuff on the public record to demonstrate what a menace Trump is, and he has violated the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution by personally profiting from his office, and there are multiple cases where he attempts to obstruct justice. I think the idea that has been in a number of articles in the mainstream press that Democrats would be ill-advised to talk about impeachment, that's just crazy. You heard the same thing early on in Watergate, and Democrats need to do their constitutional duty. So if Democrats take back the House, they're going to take back the ability of committees to launch investigations, to use subpoena power if need be. And Trump is so much worse than Nixon that I cannot imagine that Democrats would not go forward with an impeachment. And, you know, you build popular support in the course of doing it. And you should not be intimidated by polls right now that show that the public, majority of the public, doesn't think this is a good idea, because support builds as you unearth more details. And the same psychology obtained early in the Nixon impeachment process. So, you know, and this all was before the Woodward book came out and the anonymous op-ed in the Times came out. And so, you know, if you have Trump's own top officials doing whatever they can to contain him, there is a constitutional remedy available. It's called impeachment, and we ought to be proceeding with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And another guest we had recently was Jules Bernstein, who, as you know, has drafted kind of reasons for impeachment. He's got a very long list. You know, if you pick out any one or two of those would be grounds for impeachment. And there
That's
are literally
right.
scores of violations that Trump has done, which would be strong grounds for impeachment. That obviously the political problem we have is the Republicans in Congress right now, no matter what they say privately about how crazy Trump is, how incompetent he is, you know, all the things we hear before and now from this Woodward book that's just coming out. But in spite of what they say privately, really none of them are speaking out, and there are no profiles of courage there. Republicans not doing their constitutional duty to protect the Republic and speak out about this. So, you know, I don't see any way, unless we can get the Democrats to take back the House. I guess we could start at them, but even if we start impeachment proceedings in the House, it goes to the Senate for the trial, and it's hard to see the Democrats taking both the House and the Senate. So what do you think
Go
ahead.
Well, I do think that as more and more detail comes out, you're going to have some Republicans deciding that let's get rid of this guy in time to regroup for the 2020 election. And, you know, you've got a handful of Republicans like Ben Sasse and Graham, and some who are leaving like Corker, but some who are staying, that if enough information comes out, It's a combination of doing what's right for the Republic and doing what's expedient for the Republican Party. So I could see 15 Republicans voting for impeachment in the Senate, which is, I guess you'd need 17, depending on whether we take back the Senate. But you see, this is an evolving situation.
Mm-hmm.
You can't view it statically. It evolves as information comes out, as public sentiment shifts. And you can't just look at it in terms of where public opinion is today. You need to build public opinion.
Right, exactly right. We have just a couple minutes left, and I wanted to ask you, you've written so many fantastic books. I mean, really a great thought leader for America. And your most recent book is Can Democracy Survive Global Capitalism? It seems to me the title goes right to the heart of the problem we have, you know, where the very wealthy have so much influence now, particularly in the Republican Party and on legislation that comes out both out of Congress and out of the states, many of which are now run by Republicans. Tell our listeners, what is your most recent book about, and why did you write it?
Well, you know, I wrote it because I think the use of global trade treaties and deregulation treaties to undermine the ability of an individual country to regulate capitalism, and the backlash that produced, the destruction of so much of the New Deal social compact, and the effect on living standards for ordinary people, a lot of that is the deep backstory to where the anger that produced Donald Trump came from. And so if having a regulated form of capitalism or a social democracy is necessary to create an equitable society and to have faith in democracy itself, then we need to take back the capture of the global ground rules by corporations and go back to something like Bretton Woods 1944, where the rules of global commerce are intended to create balance between the needs of entrepreneurs and the needs of regular working people. That's what we had after World War II. That's what we lost beginning in the 1970s. We need to take it back. Otherwise, we're going to lose not just a decent economy, but we're going to lose our democracy.
Fantastic. And so our listeners know to find out more about your important work, they can go to prospect.org. Is that right?
Yes, they can.
Fantastic.
They will.
I highly encourage our listeners to do it. That's all the time we have. Robert Kuttner, thank you so much for being on All Together Now.
Thank you for having me.